Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 8 lines from the top of Kuf Chof Vav. Toward the end of the line, you will see it says V'Rami Rab Yossi Ad Rab Yossi. Before beginning the Gemara itself, let us glance at the outside margin to take advantage of one of the features of the Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, namely the Nosei, the topic heading. From time to time, we offer topic headings and structural notes as the Gemara goes on. In this case, under our topic heading, we've written the following: Liyashev Stira, to resolve a seeming contradiction, Rabbi Yossi, within the Tanaic opinion of Rabbi Yossi, B'inyan Tuma Tamuna Bokas V'Oila. Up till now, we have seen Rabbi Yossi presented as being of the opinion that Tuma Tamuna, that's Tuma, source of Tuma, that is contained within a very confined location. In other words, let us say you have a piece of corpse of flesh within an area that's less than a tefach by a tefach, in a very squalid location or confined location. Rabbi Yossi says that the tumah will not issue forth; it won't penetrate its location and issue outwards. However, the Gemara that we are about to learn presents what it thinks is a contradiction within Rabbi Yossi on this point, namely, whereby we will see that Rabbi Yossi holds that Tuma Tumuna does penetrate and issue forth, and hence someone who is hovering over it, or if you have something that is Tohar positioned over this area, the Tuma will affect it. The Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source featuring a dog that ate some corpse flesh, and the dog died. And we will be interested in knowing if the area in which the dog is located is also Tomei. So the Gemara continues. We should point out that we open up with a long question. In other words, in raising the contradiction, we're in effect raising a problem. This is illustrated by the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. So you see that, and the vertical dashed line continues quite a number of lines down in the Gemara. All of this forms the question. So the Gemara says, V'Rami d'Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. Let us raise a contradiction within Rabbi Yossi. Up till now, we have seen Rabbi Yossi holding, and you can see we dashed underlined this right before today's Gemara, namely, Tuma Tumuna Eino Bokas, according to Rabbi Yossi. But here we see otherwise, Disnan, the following Tanaic source. You can see the next number of lines are in a frame indicating that it is a Tanaic source. Hakelev Sho'ochal Besar Meis, a dog that consumed some human flesh from a dead human being. Umeis Hakelev, and the dog died. Umutol Al Ho'askupa, and the dog is lying on the askupa. An askupa is an entranceway into a house. And the neck of the dog is facing inwards, facing toward the house. Inwards meaning in the direction of the house. So that the neck of the dog is on this threshold facing in. Rabbi Meir Omer, Im Yesh Bitzavoro Poseach Tefach, Mevi Es Hatuma. if the width of the dog's neck is a tefach, this will cause the tumah to go into the house. It will draw it in. It'll serve as a type of bridge under which the an overhang, if you will, under which the tumah will go into the house. Ve'im lav eino mevi es hatumah. If the neck is not a tefach wide, then it won't cause the tumah to enter the house. In other words, the tumah, we'll assume for right this minute, is in the dog's stomach, which is outside the house. The neck of the dog is on the threshold, facing in the house, facing toward the house. If you don't have the width of the dog's neck, a tefach, so the tumah will remain outside the house. Rabbi Yossi Omer. And, of course, for our discussion, what Rabbi Yossi says is of central importance. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Royin es hatumo mikneged hashokuf filifnim habayis tome. At this point, the feeling of the Gemara in learning this line is that we look at the mokum of the tumah, the location of the tumah in the dog's body. And what this line is saying is that if the tumah is from the threshold inwards, then the house will be tumah. Mikeneged hashokuf velachutz habayis tohor. If it's from the point of the threshold outwards, the house is tohor. We should point out that the word shokuf is a position, is a location on the threshold. Specifically, it's the area in the doorway onto which the door closes. In other words, everyone can picture a door frame with a door and a door hanging on hinges in the door frame. The door frame is built in such a way that there is a point at which the door can't move any further. When you close the door, it stops at a certain point, and that point that it stops, it sort of comes into contact with the door frame itself, which is slightly smaller than the door, causing the door to stop. It doesn't swing back and forth. That's called the shokuf, the point at which the door stops on the door frame. So if the tumah is located from that point inwards, the house is tumah. Let us glance at the Rashi. We're looking at Rashi, Dibur HaMashal Bayis Tumah. This is found under the Gemara text, the fourth line under the Gemara text, Habayis Tumah, Hashto Kasalka Daitoch. At this point, the Gemara feels this comment of Rabbi Yossi is coming off of Rabbi Meir's comment, which spoke about the neck of the dog not having a tefach in dimension. So the thought is that Rabbi Yossi's comment is going specifically on that case. Dekomer Rabbi Meir, habayis tohor. Rabbi Meir had said that if the dog's neck was less than a tefach wide, so the tumah would not be drawn into the house. V'komer Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi responds and says, Im hatumah min hamashkoif v'lifnim, if the tumah is located from the mashkof, that we said shokuf, and inwards, even though the neck of the dog is less than a tefach wide, whereby the neck of the dog is not an ohel, however, the neck being from the shokuf inwards, it is being overshadowed by the house itself. Ustam halal garon ein bo tefach, and the hollow of a throat of a dog doesn't have a tefach to it. V'havi lo tuma tumuna. So, in effect, we have the tuma if it's in the neck of the dog. This dead dog would, and it's positioned from the shokuf inwards. So, we're describing Tumah Tmunah, Tumah located in a very confined location, or is inside the dog's neck. And we are noting that it says at this point in the source, Habayis Tomei, so that the Tumah, that's Tmunah, is in effect Bokas. This will be pointed out once again later when the Gemara reviews the source after we complete the source. In the meantime, let's continue in our source. Rebbe Lazar Omer, Piv Lifnim Habayis Tohor. If the mouth of the dog is inside the house, and the posterior of the dog, the anal orifice, is facing outside, so the house is Tohor. He is of the opinion that derech, the normal course of that which a dog consumes, is to go out the posterior orifice. And hence, that is positioned in this particular instance outside, so the house is Tohor. Piv lachutz, if the dog's mouth is facing outwards, so the anal orifice is thereby facing inwards, habayis tomei, the house will be considered unclean. That neishetuma yoytze derech shulav, because the normal course of events is that which the dog consumed, in this case the corpse meat, will come out derech shulav, which means through that particular orifice. And if it's facing in the house, that's the determining factor, that the tumah will end up in the house. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Bein kach ubein kach abayis tomei. Whether the mouth is facing inwards or the mouth is facing outwards, the house is considered tomei. Rashi elaborates a bit more on his shita, but he is not the focus of our discussion. We want to continue in the Gemara. My lav, is it not so, when learning Rabbi Yossi in this source, that his comment was a'ein b'tzavaro poseach tefach koi Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yossi was going on the comment of a Rimeir regarding a narrow dog neck. And we understood Rabbi Yossi to say that we determine where the tumah is located, and if it's located in the dog's neck, which may be lying within the point of the door frame where the door stops, the house will be tomei. And since we're talking about ein b'tzavaro poseach tefach, we're describing a case of tumah tmunah, this confined, buried tumah, ushmamina tumah tmunah bokas. From the fact that Rabbi Yossi is declaring the house tomei in the case of mikeneged ashokuf lifnim, it shows us that the tumah that was in this confined location within the dog, it penetrates outwards and creates tumah in the house. So we see Rabbi Yossi holding to the contrary, in other words, contradicting what he had been recorded as saying earlier. So if you compare these dashed underline comments, the Tumah Tmunah Bokas, with what we had above, Tumah Tmunah Eina Bokas, we have a stira in Rabbi Yossi. Omar Rava. Rava comes along and says that we have to re-understand what Rabbi Yossi was talking about. Rava tells us that Rabbi Yossi is not going on the case of Ein B'tzavaro Tefach. According to Rava, Rabbi Yossi is recording a kula for us, a leniency, something that Rabbi Meir was not of the opinion. Omar Rava, Royen es Chalal Hatuma Kotoni, Rabbi Yossi Betarti Polig. When Rabbi Yossi said Royen es Hatuma, he wasn't referring to let us check out the position of the Tumah itself. if that is all that we were doing, then if the tumor were located in a confined location inside the neck, which was in the house, and if it were so that the neck was a confined location, the tumor would not exit through penetration, because in fact tumor tumna ena bokas according to Rabbi Yossi. But rather, Rabbi Yossi is saying that when you look at the width of the dog's neck, or when you look at the dimension associated with the dog's neck and its ability to draw tuma into the house, you don't look simply at the width of the dog's neck and include the thickness of the neck walls to get to a tefach. That will not be enough, says Rabbi Yossi, according to Rava. Rather, you'd have to establish that the halal, in other words, that the interior of the neck, excluding the neck walls, would be of a tefach. You have to, if you had that the halal was a tefach, then there would be hamshacha and the tumah would be drawn in. But if the neck's width, total width of the neck is a tefach, that would still not be enough to cause the tumah to be drawn in. And Rava points out that Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Meir on two counts. V'ko'amar lei l'Rabbi Meir. And he says to Rabbi Meir, point one, the ko'amris ki yesh b'tzavoro poseach tefach mevis a tumah. You said that if the neck width, including the thickness of the neck walls, is a total of a tefach, that will be enough for the tumah to be drawn inwards into the house. Anan bosur chalola azlinan. We, says Rabbi Yossi, we follow the halal is the airspace of the neck, the interior space of the neck, exclusive of the neck walls. In other words, there must be a tefach of airspace in the dog's neck in order to even begin thinking about the tumah being drawn inwards. Ude ko'amris al ho'askupa kula tomei. And you said that if the dog is lying anywhere on the door threshold, it's considered as if it's inside. And hence, if the neck were facing inwards while lying on the askupa, that would be enough to create a tuma problem. I don't say that way. Rather, mikeneged hashokuf v'lifnim habayis tomei. Mikeneged hashokuf v'lachutz habayis tohor. It's not accurate to say anywhere on the entrance way, but rather specifically from the point of the entrance way that the door closes. Many of you can imagine the entrance way to a house has a certain amount of depth to it. It's we'll call it a deep entrance way. At some point in the middle of the entrance way, you find the door. So Rabbi Yossi is saying only from the point that the door closes and inwards would be considered inside. But from the point that the door closes outwards, even though it's on the threshold, it's still not considered inside the house. And hence, if the dog's neck were lying, even though it's lying on the threshold, but it's not lying from the point that the door closes and inwards, it still wouldn't be sufficient to cause the tumah to enter the house. Rav Acha brei de Rava masni lo behedya. Rav Acha teaches this understanding of Rabbi Yossi in the words itself of his version of the Tanaic source, thusly, Rabbi Yossi Oimer Royin es Chalal Hatumah. This would be clearer than the source that we had above, where we needed Rava to explain it. Here it says it black on white in this version of that source that we look at the Chalal, the space of the Tumah. If the space is a Tefach, then the tumah can be said to be drawn in to the house. On Daf Kuf Chof Hey, we had been introduced to Reb Yossi, who had said that the term Nogea could be used interchangeably with Ma'ahil. This was important for the answer the Gemara gave on Daf Chof Hey to resolve a Tanaic source that we saw over there. So without reviewing the entire sugya, all that we're focusing on right now is the issue of the term Nogea being used as a reference to Ohel. We saw that Reb Yossi, in fact, learns that way. We also saw a source that would not learn that way. So the Gemara is asking, Uman Tano de Polig Ole. Who is the Tano that would disagree with Reb Yossi and would not refer to Ohel by the term Nogea? Answer, Rabbi Shimon, who? That Tano is Rabbi Shimon, who would not interchange the word Nogea with Ohel. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source that continues onto Omid Beis, Rabbi Shimon Omer. Now we look at the top of Kuf Chavov Omid Beis. Shalosh Tumos Porshos Min Hameis. Literally, it says there are three types of tuma that emanate from the corpse. The truth is that there are numerous kinds of tuma that emanate from a corpse. However, with regard to the list of three that the source will feature, we will be able to say that in the list of three sources of tuma, there will be two of three ways that the tuma is communicated or emanates from each one of these three examples. In order to appreciate what we are about to learn, we have a little chart that you might see on the inside margin of the Gemara. Across the top of the chart, you can see there's Mago, Maso, and Ohel. Mago is contact, Maso is supporting, and Ohel is overshadowing. Down the side, we see Molo Tarvid, that's the spoonful of rekev, of decaying corpse matter. Etzem Kisora, a bone that's the size of a barley grain. And Golel V'dofek, these are the sides and the covering of a coffin. So we have three examples of Tumas Meis. Once again, Molo Tarvid, Rekev, Etzem Kisora, and Golel V'dofek. We have three types of methods that the Tumah is communicated: Mago, Masa, and Ohel. If you notice the chart, each type of Tumas Meis here has only two ways that the Tumah is communicated, indicated by the check marks. So by the Molo Tarvid, we see it's communicated through Masa and Ohel, but not through Mago. You'll ask, where is Mago? So Mago is present in the cases of Etzem Kisora and Golel V'dofek. Likewise, Etzem Kisora, looking at the chart, you can see is communicated through Mago and Maso and not through Ohel. And finally, Golel V'dofek can be communicated through Mago and Ohel and not through Maso. That's the essence of this Tanaic source that we will see now in words. But as we learn the source, we have to pay close attention to the point in the source in which you see the term Mago used in contradistinction to Ohel. And hence, we will be able to say that this Tana, Rabbi Shimon, would not term Ohel by the use of the word Mago. So our source says from the top line that Rabbi Shimon holds Shalosh Tumos Poshus Min Hameis. There are three examples of Tuma that are related to the dead. And we mentioned Molo Tarvid, Esksora, and Golel V'dofek. Shtayim B'chol Achas, Hashlishis Ein Bohen. Each one of the examples that we just cited has two methods of tumah communication, the third method not present. The Elohein, these now are the three examples of the tumas meis. Molotar v'drekev, etzem kisora v'gola v'dofek, which we already explained. Molotar v'drekev, regarding this example of tumas meis, the spoonful of corpse decay matter, metame b'masu v'ohel, tumah can be communicated through supporting or through overshadowing, v'eno metame b'magal, but tumah is not communicated through magal. Now, at this point, we've dashed underlined v'eno metame b'magal, and he is saying there is ohel, but no magal, indicating that this Tana will use these two terms do not or cannot mean the same thing. They are contrasted terms, ohel versus magal. This is what we meant when we have a Tana that's cholik on Rabbi Yossi, because in Rabbi Yossi's use of the words, he was willing to term ohel, overshadowing, by using the word nogea. Okay, that having been said, the source goes on and says vehechon mago. So where is there tumas mago in the realm of mace? If it's not in molotar v'drekev, so then where is it? Answer ba'achas mehen. It's in the other two. Any one of the other two examples, you will find tumas mago. And if at this point in the source, either one of the other two is a reference to the Etzem Kisora and Golo V'Dofik. And if you look at the chart, you can see that, in fact, by Etzem Kisora and Golo V'Dofik, you do have Tumas Mago. Continuing, Etzem Kisora, with regard to that type of Tumas Mace, the bone the size of a barley grain, Metama V'Masu V'Mago, Tuma can be communicated through supporting or carrying, and through contact, the eno metame ba'oyel, the phenomenon of overshadowing, where you have a roof covering me and an etzem ksura, I will not become tome by even though I'm under the same overhang. Vehechon oholo, where is there a manifestation of tumas ohel? Ba'achas mehen, in either one of the other two examples. And number three, goel of a dofek, metame b'maga of oil. With regard to the parts of the coffin, we say that there is tumas mace upon touch or being under the same overhang. The eno metame b'masa, the hechon maso. So where is there tumas maso? The echod mehen. So at this point, we were focusing primarily on the line in which you saw that there is Tumas Ohel and no Tumas Mago, showing us that this Tana, who is Rabbi Shimon, says that Mago is one thing and Ohel is something else. Kulis Nevela v'kulis Hasheretz v'chulei. Tanu Rabbanan. Before going on in the source, we have a topic heading that says, Ein Tumas Maso Elohim Ken Yesh Efsharus Lamago. You will not have tumah communicated through masa, through carrying an item that has a potential for tumas masa, for example, nevela, unless there is the possibility of touching the nevela. So only in a circumstance where there's a potential for contact can we speak about tumah being communicated through support as well. So the Gemara continues. The source opens up with a quote from the Pasuk, Beniv Losa. And this word is here to exclude Velo Bekulis Stuma. And there will be no Tuma with regard to a sealed thigh bone. Yochol Afilu Nikva. We should point out, as we have in previous discussions, that the thigh bone is understood to contain within it a good deal of marrow, and marrow has a meat status to it. And when it comes from a dead animal, it would have a nevela status. However, if the bone is sealed, so there will not be any communication of this of the tumah. Yochol afilu nikva is, are we going to say that even if the bone has a hole in it, that there will be no Tuma communication? Talmud Lomar, Hanogea, Yitma. And we're darshaning the Yud in this word, as Rashi points out. Es she'efsher liga tome, that situation that has the potential for contact. And in this case, since there's a hole, there is a potential of contact. Namely, if, let's say, one leans over this bone that has a hole in it, even if it's a small hole, a strand from his hair could enter the hole. And since we're talking about hair that's attached to a person's head, coming into contact, that would be tantamount to the person touching the marrow. So if there's a possibility of contact, then there will be tuma, even through masa. And if there is no possibility of touching it, then tor, then there will be no communication of tuma, even through masa, even through carrying this bone. Omale Rabbi Zero Labaye. You'll notice in the next couple of lines, diamonds appear. These are addressed by our structural note in the outside margin under the heading Mivneh. You notice a diamond, and we have the words Elomeyat in quotation marks. The diamond in this case surrounds this expression Elomeyat. Kushios, these represent questions. Mikrim, we will present cases, Shenirim She'ein Efshrus Lamago, where it seems that there is no possibility of having contact with the Nevela, Uvacholzo Siesh Tumas Masa, and still there will be Tumas Masa. And that would be a challenge to the principle we were just taught. So Rabbi Zera says to Abaye, Elameata, Behema be'oida be'ora lo tetame, a dead animal before it has been skinned, according to what this source is teaching us, should not communicate any tumah. And yet we know that if someone, let us say, moves the carcass of a dead animal, even when we're talking about a carcass that has not been skinned, there is tumas masa. So the Gemara answers, there is no challenge to the rule. It's true that there's skin around the animal. Pok chazi kama nekovim yesh ba, but take note of how many orifices there are in an animal. You've got its mouth, its nostrils, its eyes. All of those represent openings, and hence the rule stands that since there is an opening, so there's potential of having internal contact with the animal, in this case with its flesh. And the fact that it hasn't been skinned yet doesn't make it as if it's sealed like the sealed bone. Omar le Rav Papa le Rava. Rav Papa does a similar thing, raises a question. Elo me'ata, according to what the source is telling us, that if you have nevela meat that's completely sealed, so there will be no tumas masa, so then kuya b'chelba lo tetame, a kidney surrounded by the chelba, the membrane that surrounds the kidney, in this case is termed chelba, it's chelev. So carrying the kidney of a dead cow, dead animal, should not result in tuma, and yet we know that it does. So the Gemara answers, it's not accurate to say that the kuya is completely sealed off by the chelev. Tochazi kama chutin nimshachin hemena. Just take note of how many strands of basar, of meat, are found in the chelev that penetrate the chelev, running to its exterior, so that those strands, the chutin, have a basar status, and as such, they have nevela status, so that you, even though you have a kuyu that's surrounded by the chelev, nevertheless you have these strands of meat running through the chelev, enabling you to have contact with them, with the basar. Boi revoshaya, chishev oleha lenokva velo nikva mahu. Let us say you have a bone that has marrow, and you intended to penetrate it, to make a hole in it, but didn't actually make a hole in it yet. What is the din? Mechusar nekiva kemechusar maise dami oiloi. Do we say the absence of actually making the hole is considered as if there is no hole there? Or do we say that the absence of the actual making doesn't play a role, doesn't matter, but it's all that matters is that you planned to make the hole, it's viewed as if there is a hole there, and hence the kulis, even though it's actually sealed right now, it would be metame b'masa, simply because of the fact that you planned to make the hole. Hadar Poshta, and after raising the question, we had Rav Hoshaya raising the question, he then resolved it. Mechusar nekiva, this next word is the subject of a girsa issue, a textual version question, and some delete the word, resulting in the opposite conclusion as to if you are to read it with the word. So if you read it according to the girsa found in the Shita Mekubetzes, you read this line as Mechusar Nekiva Kimechusar Maisedomi, that the absence of the actual making makes it such that there is no hole there, and hence there would be no Tumas Masa. If you don't follow the Shita Mekubetzes, you'll come out with the opposite conclusion, namely that the Mechusar Maisa is Lav Kimechusar, the Mechusar Nekiva is Lav Kimechusar Maisedomi, that the fact that you merely plan to make the hole, even though you didn't actually make it, it is not considered lacking the action, and hence it's considered as if the hole is there, and it would be metame b'masa. The Mishnah. Beitzas hasheretz hamarukemes tahora. Nikva kolshehu tomei. The egg of a sheretz. There are different types of sheretz creatures in the world, and some of them are egg layers. If it laid an egg that had a new sheretz forming in it, just like a chicken has a chick that forms in it, that which forms inside an egg is referred to by the term efroach. That is what you'll see in the Rashi. So the sheretz efroach, since it's found inside the egg, and the egg is naturally sealed, one who has contact with this sheretz egg will remain tohor. However, nikva kolshehu, if the egg is with a hole in it, even a minor-sized hole, it will communicate tumah. Now, the Mishnah features a creature that one does not see every day, but it exists as far as the Mishnah is concerned. The fact that one does not see the following creature doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Achbor shechetzio boser vechetzio adoma. What we're describing is an achbor, very often translated as a mouse, but some type of sheretz or rodent creature that comes under the sheretz heading, that when dead would communicate tuma. We have here an achbor that doesn't form through natural, observable, sexual relations, but rather it seems, in other words, to the naked eye, it seems that it forms from, it comes forth from the dirt. So we are describing here an achbor that is in partial formation, that from the dirt only half so far has turned into flesh, the other half of it is still in dirt form, and it's dead. So this achbor shechetzio boser vechetzio adama hanogea b'boser tamei. If you touch the fleshy side of this creature and it's dead, it will communicate tuma. B'adama tohor. If you touch the dirt side of this, you will remain tohor. Rabbi Yehuda omer af hanogea b'adama shekenegen haboser tamei. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if you touch the dirt, the part of the dirt that is opposite the portion that has flesh on it, there will nevertheless be a communication of Tumah. The Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source. There will be no Gemara discussion on this particular source. It opens up quoting a Pasuk. You'll notice on the side of the Gemara, we have the Pasuk recorded, Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It says in the Pasuk, which we'll read before the Gemara, Eile hatmeim lochem b'chol hasheretz, kohanogea bohem b'moysom yitmo ad horev. In this pasuk, the second word is hatmeim, and the Gemara says, the hay of this pasuk, l'rabois beitzas hasheretz v'kulis hasheretz. This is coming to include not only the dead sheretz, but its egg, or its thigh bone, is mitame. Yochol afilu lo rikma. In the case of the egg, would it be true that it's mitame even if there is no formation of the sheretz, the newly forming sheretz present? Tamalomer hasheretz, ma sheretz shirokam. Just like the sheretz is a creature that has formed, af basis a sheretz shirokma. So too, the egg that would be the subject of tuma would be an egg in which the sheretz has begun to form. Yochol afilu lo nikvu. Could it be that there is tuma even if the egg has no hole in it? Tamad lomar hanogea yitma. In this pasuk, you see the words hanogea, and a few words later, you see the word yitma, and we learn es she'efsho liga tomei. The es she'efsho liga tohor. If you have the possibility of coming into contact with the interior of the egg, so there the egg will communicate tuma. If not, then there is no tuma communicated. V'kama nikivosa, what's the size of the hole that we're talking about? Kechut hasaira, she'ef sheliga kechut hasaira. It could be a very, very fine hole, a hole sufficient only to allow a hair to penetrate. So if it's that size, it's enough to enable the egg to communicate tuma to one who touches it. Achbar shechetzio v'chulei. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll notice we have two lishonos, as indicated by the Roman numeral 1 and 2. You see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, two versions of this discussion. To be a little more accurate, we have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi making a comment, and there are two versions as to what his comment is referring to. So, as the Gemara continues, we read, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, V'hu shehishritz al pene kulo. We saw in the Mishnah that the achbar that was half flesh and half adoma, it says that if you touch the basar, there will be tuma. So, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that it's true that if you touch the basar, there will be tumah, but that's provided that the basar, the flesh of this developing achbar, has developed in its entire length, so that you have half of the achbar fleshy in its, but it, and the flesh has developed within the entire length of the creature. Iko demasni lo asefa. There are those that teach Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's comment as an explanation of the Seifa. What does it say in the Seifa, the second part of the source? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af hanogea ba'domo shekeneged bosor tomei. According to Rabbi Yehuda, even through touching the dirt part of this achbor, there could be tuma communicated, provided the dirt that you're touching is facing the part of the achbor that has flesh developed. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, v'hu shehishritz al pene kulo. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi qualifies, when is it that by touching the dirt there will be tuma? That's provided that the flesh side has developed along its entire length. Man demasni lo aresha. he who teaches Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, namely the requirement of the flesh developing in its entire length, and he teaches that regarding the resha, where we speak about the touching of the flesh itself. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is saying that even if you touch the flesh itself, there isn't automatically tumah unless the flesh has developed in its entire length. Then kol shekein asefa. Then this version would expect this standard all the more so to be applied to the seifa, which speaks about him touching the dirt side, namely that when touching the dirt side, there's no chance of tumah communicated unless the flesh side has developed in its entire length. Uman demasni lo asefa, the version that teaches Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi as a comment on the seifa which spoke about touching the dirt side, there will be no tumah unless the flesh side has developed in its entire length. Aval resha, but with regard to the resha, where he is touching the flesh side of it, it could be then that afagav delo hishritz, since he's touching the flesh side directly, there will be tumah even if it hasn't developed in its entire length. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic that we're entitling Achbor Shebiyam. That's a very brief title for the source that has in it quite a bit of discussion. What we will be talking about is we're introducing the sea or the ocean in our discussion, and we're going to talk about the Achbor Shebiyam. Achbor Shebiyam is a type of fish that is apparently it looks like an achbor. Again, if we assume that an achbor is a mouse or a rat, something of that nature, is apparently a fish that looks like such a creature, but it's a fish, and it's in the sea. The Torah speaks about a number of different types of shrotzim that communicate tumah when they're dead. One of them is an achbor. Does the Torah have in mind the achbor shebiyam also as being something that communicates tumas sheretz? So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the sea as a location. Namely, what would happen if you have a dead land achbor in the sea? Does location make a difference? Let us now turn to the source and be wary of the fact that there are numerous details that will appear. Tana Rabbana, mitoch shenemar achbor. From the fact that the posuk makes reference to an achbor as being a sheretz that communicates tuma, shomeani afilu achbor shebiyam shishmo achbor, should I conclude that an achbor from a sea achbor, which it's a different creature, a totally different creature, but it's called achbor, happens to have the same name, the achbor fish. Should I assume that the Torah is saying that that too, when dead, will communicate tumah? Well, the Brisa responds, vidinhu. Vidinhu means that through logic, I would conclude that it will not communicate tumah, and I wouldn't need a pasuk to teach me this point. Why? How does the logic work? Timei b'chuda v'timei b'achbar. In the same pasuk that we have actually written on the side, you can see Vayikra Yudal of pasuk Chavtes. In that pasuk, there's in addition to achbar, there's also the choled is mentioned, which we call here the chulda. So the Torah mentions together with achbor the chulda. And what do we know about the chulda? Ma chulda min hagodel al oretz. Just like the chulda is something that grows on the ground, meaning on dry land, it's a creature that's not found. There isn't any chulda equivalent in the sea. It's found only on dry land. Af achbor, so too, the achbor that the Torah is referring to is min hagodol al oretz, is a reference to only the land achbor. So with this piece of logic, we would conclude that Achbor Shebiyam is not mitame. However, Oiklach Liderech Zu, or possibly choose this alternative route or other direction, other logic. Time b'chulda v'time b'achbor. The Torah says that a chulda is metame, and the Torah says the achbor is metame. Ma chulda kol shishmo chulda. Just like in the case of chulda, anything that's called chulda is metame. Af achbor kol shishmo achbor. Avi achbor shebiyam shishmo achbor. So to buy achbor, anything that's called achbor will metame, and I will include in that the C achbor, which is also called achbor. So, do we go according to the location of it, or do we go according to the name? Talmud Lomar Al Ha'aretz. So, the pasuk is needed. Not like we thought when we opened up the source and we said, V'dinhu, that through logic I can arrive at a conclusion. Not so. I need the pasuk, and the pasuk says, Al Ha'aretz. At this point, we are taking that to mean that only the land achbar will communicate tuma. The Gemara asks, is that really the final word? Maybe I'm not going to darshan the word alaretz that way to exclude the achbar shebiyam, but maybe Al Ha'aretz teaches me something else. Namely, it'll teach me whether it be a land achbor or a sea achbor. It depends on location, not variety. So here we challenge the conclusion. The conclusion up till this point, just to review, was Al Ha'aretz meaning land achbor to exclusion of sea achbor. Now we ask a question. E al ha'aretz yochol, maybe al ha'aretz yitmo yorad lam yo lo yitmo. Maybe al ha'aretz is to be taken not as a description of variety of achbor, but rather location. Namely, and you can find this in Rashi, all achbors have the potential of communicating tuma. It simply depends where they are. If they are dead on dry land, then they will metama, even the achbor shebiyam. If they are in the water, if one has contact with the achbor, there will be no communication of tuma, even if you're dealing with an achbor shebaretz, a dry land achbor. Maybe that's the way to go. Talmud Lomar ha-shoreitz. Kol mokom shishoreitz. The pasuk says Hashoreitz, and we saw that already. We read the pasuk v'zelochem atomei b'sheretz hashoreitz, which tells me kol mokum shishoreitz. Now here we need the Rashi at the top. Talmud Lomar shoreitz havi le lemeimar v'zelochem atomei b'sheretz haretz uksiv b'sheretz hashoreitz haretz. The pasuk could have said that this is what is tomei to you, b'sheretz haretz, and yet it says hashoreitz, an extra word, eiser lei hashoreitz, lidroish, to tell me kol mokoim shehu yochol lishrotz, which means lirchoish v'lonua, wherever it could move around. Hashoreitz being taken to mean lirchoish v'lonua means to squiggle and to move. V'harei af b'yam hushot, a dry land achbor can swim in the water. Once again, v'harei af b'yam hushot achbor haretz, the dry land achbor can swim. Hilkoch al korchoch, therefore, since the pasuk is telling me hashoreitz means wherever it's found, there will be tumah. So therefore, the expression al korchoch al haretz that we just finished darshaning before cannot be to exclude the sea as a location of tumah, because the sea is included as a location where tumah could be communicated. Al korchach al oretz lemin haoretz hu the asu v'lav limute yorad liyam. Therefore, the previous expression of al haoretz will have to refer to a variety and not location. And therefore, at this point, we'll be telling you that only the dry land variety of achbor will mitama, and not sea, not achbor shebiyam. Now, as far as location where tuma is communicated, so we're saying the dry land achbor will communicate tuma whether you had contact with it on land or in the water. Oh, eno omer hashoret, elo hashoret kol hamashritz yitmo, she'en mashritz lo yitmo. Maybe hashoret is not a reference to its movement, namely wherever it moves, but rather it's a description of how it multiplies, how it reproduces. And if that be the case, the term shorates is an expression referring to the mating of the two opposite genders, the mating of a male and female producing offspring. Like the pasuk says in describing the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, it says poru vayishritzu. Poru is fructification, and vayishritzu used in the same contact, vayishritzu having the same basis as the word shorates, indicating procreation through gender mating. Now, if that be the case, that hashorates is telling me only those that reproduce through sexual reproduction. Ah, otzi achbor shechetzio boser vechetzio adoma she'ein poro v'rova. I might take the word hashoreitz then to serve as an exclusion of the creature that develops from the dirt, and such a creature that's half dirt and half flesh would not be metame. So maybe that's what Hashoreitz is coming to tell me. And if we were to take this approach, I would then go back and say that the Hashoreitz is not telling me all places that the thing moves around, including the sea, but rather it's a reference to the reproduction. And if that be the case, I would be able to reintroduce the possibility of the Achbor Shebiyam being metame. Well, the dinhu, logic, will tell me that the achbor that's chetzi bos chetzi adoma should be metame. Time b'chulda v'time b'achbor. Ma chulda kol shishmo chulda. Just like when the Torah says that the chulda is a sheres that's metame, the intention is all chuldas. Af achbor kol shishmo achbor ovi achbor shechetzi bos chetzi adoma. So too, when the Torah says that achbor is metama, I will include anything that happens to be called achbor, including the achbor that's half flesh, half dirt. O klach l'derech zu, or maybe we'll go in this direction. Ma chulda pora v'rova, af achbor pora v'rova. Just like the chulda is something that procreates, so too, just like the chulda procreates through sexual reproduction, so too, only an achbor that reproduces itself that way. And we would thereby mimayit, we would thereby exclude the chatzi boser v'chatzi adoma. Talmud lomar, basheretz. Therefore, I have the term basheretz that comes along to tell me, it's an extra expression, that tells me that it will be mitame. The Gemara continues with a question. Omer le'ahu midrabbanan l'rova. This question, by the way, is a long question. You can see its length is indicated by the long question marking, the shin that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical line, vertical dashed line. So, ha'hu midrabbanan asks Rava, Emor basheretz, the term basheretz is lasuye achbor shechetzio boser vechetzio adoma, that it's to be included as something that will generate tumah. hashoretz equals kol shuhu shoretz, anything that moves around. Vafilu achbor shebiyam, even the achbor of the sea. So if you take this approach, we're going to end up telling you that all different kinds of achbors would be metameh. The e mishum al ha'aretz, and if you're worried about the expression al ha'aretz, which we before had said was excluding the achbor shebiyam, no, I will tell you that it means like this: al ha'aretz yitma, yorad liyam lo yitma. That al ha'aretz teaches me location. That all these achbor creatures will be metame, but it depends where they are. Namely, on land, they will communicate tuma. But if you have contact with them while floating in the water, they won't be metame. Omar lay. So Rava responds to this suggestion. Ume achar de shavise liyam mokom tuma. Once you have declared the sea as a place of tuma, namely that you are saying that the achbor shebiyam would be metame, once you say that, mali hocha, mali hocha, what difference does it make where it's located? In other words, once you are comfortable in saying that an achbor shebiyam is also something that generates tuma, so then it seems that the yam is a place in which tuma arises, and therefore it's not comfortable for me to say that if an achbor fell into the sea, there that would be a place that tuma is not communicated. V'hai al ha'aretz miboya lei. That having been said, what Rava is doing is rejecting the approach taken by the Hahu mi derabbanan. If we glance at the Rashi, Rashi in the narrow lines, a little more than halfway down the narrow lines, Omar lei me'achad to shavis liam mokom tuma de marbis min hayam lutuma, that you are willing to say that something that comes from the sea is metame, mali ba'odabiyam, mali yotzeluchutz, what difference would it make then where it's located? Ein noach lidrosh hamikros b'midazu, elo lomar dovar hamakubal. It's not comfortable to darshan the psukim like that, but rather to darshan it in an acceptable way. So the acceptable way would therefore appear to be like was suggested earlier, namely the achbor shebiyam will be excluded by the term al ha'aretz, and the achbor shechetzio boser vechetzio adoma will be included as an example of something that could be metame. The Gemara asks, now, up till now we're understanding al ha'aretz to exclude the achbor shebiyam, but we ask v'hai al ha'aretz miboya lei lahotzi sofek tumat sofa. But is it not so that I need al ha'aretz for a different purpose, namely to exclude a case of doubt concerning having come into contact with tuma while it's floating on water? If you have an issue of did I touch the tuma that was floating, if you have a doubt about it, even if it's in a private domain, which is an area that in general we say sofik tumah b'rishus hayochid, we declare tomei. If it's floating, it will be ruled leniently. The doubt will resolve the doubt in the direction of leniency and say that he is not tomei. The Omer of Yitzchok bar Avdimi al ha'aretz. That expression is lahotzi sofik tumah tzofa. If that be the case, then I can't say that al ha'aretz is going to be used for what we suggested earlier, to exclude the Achbor Shebeyam. The Gemara answers, that is not a problem. Tarti ala oretz ksivi. You have the expression ala oretz twice in the Psukim. Therefore, one of them can be used to exclude the Achbor Shebeyam, and the other one can be used to teach me this halacha of Sofik Tumat Sofa as being Tohar. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.